This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Now that the Obama administration has instructed public schools to allow transgender students to use the restroom corresponding to their gender identity, students who are discriminated against may have a legal basis to fight back. However, officials from 11 states have filed a lawsuit asking the court to block the directive from taking effect. Here to talk about the legal arguments involved in the federal guidelines on transgender students are attorney Scott Knox of Scott Knox Attorneys at Law and NKU Chase College of Law professor Ken Katkin. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Scott and Ken, thank you for being here this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Let's start off by laying the background for this, Ken. What is the Obama administration basing these guidelines on?
Right. Well, there's a federal statute that was enacted in 1972 called the Education Amendments to the Civil Rights Act. And it basically requires that schools that receive federal funds, which is really all schools, that they not discriminate based on sex against students, right? So that's we now call that Title IX. People are probably familiar with that from athletic
women's
programs.
Athletics and yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, things like that. So that's actually the statute. It's that statute. And what the Obama administration has done now is they've interpreted discrimination based on gender identity as discrimination based on sex under that old statute. So Congress hasn't changed the law since 1972, but the Obama administration has changed its interpretation of what counts as sex discrimination.
Mm-hmm. Now, does the law actually say anything specific about bathrooms, locker rooms, or is this just kind of a use of a broader term in the law, facilities, programs, that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's a broader term in the law. So, in fact, the U.S. Department of Education since 1972 has been involved in promulgating regulations to interpret what we mean by equal access to educational facilities. And they've always said that it's okay to have sex-segregated bathrooms, certain kinds of sex-segregated athletic programs. So it doesn't require complete co-education or integration in all aspects. But there's a lot of regulations that do require boys and girls to have substantially similar opportunities to one another, and that's really the language that's being fleshed out here.
It's important to point out that a lot of people think that Obama changed the law with this. They really issued a guidance, people are referring to it as the Dear Colleague letter, and it's where they're saying, here's how we're interpreting this and here's how we're going to interpret it. So it gives schools guidance as to here's our intention, but it's really not black letter law at this point.
So it doesn't. You're saying this does not have the force of law, Scott.
It sidles right up to it, but it doesn't have the force of law. If I were a school, I'd be paying a lot of attention to it because it says here's what we will litigate about.
Okay. Also, there's the idea that correct me if I'm wrong. Title IX. If you violate Title IX, you could risk losing federal funding. Is that right? So that's kind of what I think the message that schools might be getting and states might be saying, oh, he's saying he'll withhold federal funding if we don't go along with this.
Sure.
Yeah, that's exactly what the guidance says, that they will lose federal funding if they don't go along with this.
So how much did North Carolina's law prohibiting transgender restrooms, that I think that story came out in April, and then in May we have this directive coming out. How much influence did what was going on in North Carolina have on this directive being released when it was?
I think the administration could see where things were going and want to reel it in before it got out of control, and I think wisely said, let's give them guidance on where our thinking is on this and how you need to align yourselves instead of letting things spiral out of control first.
Yeah, I would also add, though, that there's been some back and forth that precedes that because mm-hmm. the other parts of the Civil Rights Act, particularly Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, which deals with employment discrimination based on sex, the Justice Department and the EEOC and the U.S. Department of Labor all over the past few years, beginning in 2014, have been issuing guidances on transgender issues and announcing that discrimination against transgender employees counts as sex discrimination in employment. So this letter, which relates to education, is adopting an interpretation that had already been adopted and applied to employment discrimination beginning a couple years ago. So that was before anything that happened in North Carolina.
Yeah, the National Center for Lesbian Rights had filed suit a long time ago on a case of Gavin Grimm, who was at Gloucester High School, and that was resolved in 2013, where the school agreed that it would treat students the same for all purposes and not to single out this trans male. So it seems like a watershed moment with the Dear Colleague letter, but it's really been, that's 3 years ago that was resolved. So Ken's right, this has been the case for a while.
It's been building over time. It just didn't suddenly pop up.
Yeah, it's not a change in interpretation, really.
513-419-7100 if you would like to join the conversation. You can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And so we have nine states, I believe, and the governor of Maine and the Arizona Department of Education that are filing suit over this. So can the two of you just lay out what their argument's going to be against this?
Yeah, so I think the main argument will be that the words discrimination based on sex, as used in the Civil Rights Act and the Education Amendments of 1972, just doesn't really involve discrimination based on transgender status, right? And so the guidance that's been promulgated by the EEOC and by the Justice Department and the Education Department, that these guidances are not properly interpreting the underlying law. I think that's going to be the main argument that the states are making.
And I've seen some allusion to an argument that there was another Dear Colleague letter back in 2011 about that sexual violence is a form of sexual harassment and therefore sex discrimination. And I think they're also trying to make an argument that if you're forcing a cis female girl in high school to shower next to a trans female, that cis female might feel intimidated and therefore harassed. I think it's kind of reaching for that argument, but they're trying to set it up as being a conflict between the rights of the trans student and the rights of a cis student not to feel harassed.
And I take it privacy rights from what you're describing.
Yeah.
Privacy rights are coming into
sure.
play in this whole argument. If you look at the basic wording of Title IX, it says no person in the U.S. shall, on the basis of sex, be excluded from participation in, be denied the benefits of, or be subjected to discrimination under any education program or activity receiving federal financial assistance. And Ken, you were heading this direction. Sex is a pretty broad term. I guess it's going to come down to defining.
Right.
Sex versus gender identity is what we're going to be looking at.
Yeah. So the U.S. Department of Education in this Dear Colleague letter that came out in May says that gender identity is sex, that those are interchangeable, identical terms. And I think the state attorney generals who are bringing lawsuits are challenging that claim, right? So they're saying that it's just different. It's different, that it's not the same thing.
What's interesting is it's not sex and gender both are not quite as concrete as many people would like them to be.
Do you think when they wrote this amendment in 1972 they were thinking that?
Well, what occurred to me right away was that okay, if you say that trans people have to use the facilities that their birth certificate says, there is some chance they can get their birth certificate changed. There are other measures of whether you're male or female. You can get a passport change with a letter from the doctor saying that you're engaged in the course of treatment for that gender. So if you have a passport as a female, is that going to be enough that you can use the girls' room? I mean, it's the whole problem in this area of law and in society, really, I think, is that bathrooms and showers are where we're forced to be binary. And gender and sex is anything but binary. And I think that's the problem, is you're suddenly having to fit people into these holes. And it's going to be very challenging, and that's where you get the lawsuits from. I think there are well-intended people on the other side. I don't think that everybody that's against this is a bigot. But I think there needs to be some education going along with this as to why no one's threatened by trans people using the gender-appropriate bathroom and shower. And actually, the guidance, the Dear Colleague letter, points out that when it comes into a conflict between someone being uncomfortable and someone's safety, you go with the safety. And as I'm sure the first half talked about, there are abundant safety issues and marginalization issues for transgender people. And those are weighed very heavily by the Department of Justice.
Now, Ohio Attorney General Mike DeWine is saying he's going to fight this. He says if the Obama administration takes action to remove these decisions from Ohio parents and local schools, I will fight against such overreach. I think that's one of the other arguments that I've heard against this is they're terming this to be overreach on the part of the federal government. So where does that come in? What do you think on that?
Yeah, I mean, that's in a way, that's the same thing I was saying before, that the argument here would be that Title IX is a 40-year-old statute that says boys and girls should be have given similar opportunities in school to one another. And so the argument from the states here would be, well, giving boys and girls similar opportunities in school to one another is really just neither here nor there to the question of how to treat transgender students. And so for the U.S. government today to say that those are the same issue would be overreach, right? So that's the overreach argument, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it wasn't the same argument, but DeWine used a similar argument arguing against the Obergefell marriage case, and I wish him as much success with this.
Yeah, and since Ohio is not part of this particular suit that's been filed, what other option would he have to fight these guidelines?
Well, there are several ways to do it. He can join that suit or file a different suit at any time. He could wait to see if the Education Department actually does try to withhold funds and then try to challenge that withholding of funds in court. So that could happen later. There's also political means to fight it, right? So we have an election coming up. Depending who gets elected and who the next administration is, the Education Department could change these guidelines too. So states can ask them to do that. So those are different ways of fighting it.
Mm-hmm. Would he ignore this at his own peril, though, if he says we're just not going to go along with it? Would that be an option?
Well, it would be at his own peril. He could do that, but then he would risk that the Department of Education would respond by saying, well, in that case, we're withholding funds.
Yeah.
And then there would be litigation about whether that's lawful for the Department of Education to do. So he'd wind up in court for sure if he took that route, but that's a route that's possible to take.
And in this case, this only applies to public schools, right?
No.
Or any school that gets federal financial aid in some way. So this could even apply to private schools if they're taking any kind of federal money.
Yeah, which they all do, substantially all do. So I think it would.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us. And I've heard an argument, Scott, that these states don't have the standing to bring this lawsuit. What does that mean?
Well, there has
exactly?
to be a justiciable controversy in front of them, but I haven't seen the details of that argument. I don't know if you have, Ken.
The states' rights argument, you're saying?
Well, I've heard some argue that these particular states don't have the standing.
Oh, standing argument.
To bring this. So what are we talking about with standing? What do they mean here?
Okay, that's a sort of technical argument, but the idea would be that before anybody can file a lawsuit and get a federal judge to give a decision, that they would have to, the plaintiff who's filing the lawsuit, in this case the states, would have to have suffered some what they call a concrete injury in fact. So the idea there would be that until the U.S. Department of Education actually withholds funds, that there wouldn't be a concrete injury in fact, that the mere threat that we might withhold funds at some time wouldn't be that concrete injury in fact, and that the state would have to suffer a concrete injury in fact before they would have standing to sue. I actually don't think that's going to be a problem in this case. So, I mean, that would be the argument, but my sense is that the courts are going to be willing to decide this case. I don't think they're going to be looking to toss it out.
Yeah. I agree entirely. That's kind of a technical argument you'd include.
Is that one of the standard things that attorneys throw out? You don't have standing.
Yeah.
Go away.
The dismissive.
The dismissive way of doing it. Yeah. The dismissive way of doing it. What we're talking about the states and their standing. What about individuals or families? Is there the possibility that somebody could file a suit against the federal government on an individual basis?
That's what's been going on, really, is people with children in school who are not being allowed to use facilities or being told they have to use. One of the cases was about someone, I think it was a trans boy, who was being forced to use a separate bathroom that was far away from everything. And you have to keep in mind, a lot of these kids aren't necessarily out as trans with their with the other students. So having to explain why you have to change in the nurse's restroom instead of the boys' restroom is embarrassing. There have been some arguments that some of these kids have had urinary tract infections because they avoid going to the bathroom for the entire day. So there, I think in the legal aspect, it's easy in many of these cases to show the harm, both the psychological and in some cases, physical harm because of having to use a different facility.
Well, Scott, keep going on that. What are some of the legal arguments that the administration might use to say, yes, we can do this? Yes, this is.
Oh, I think it's the harm. And I think especially when you have a marginalized group like as trans kids have been, that you already are taking a vulnerable population. And so I think a lot of the legal arguments surround the damage to that child of being separated out. And I think especially if you think about how we were when we were adolescents, it doesn't take much to make you feel different and less than. So I think all those factor into it. I think they're somewhat tangential to the hardcore legal arguments, but I think they factor in. I think those are the – you know, a lot of times in law, it's the personal aspects that help you win the case. It was Jim Obergefell on the tarmac with his husband. You know, it's things like that that really public opinion affects law, and judges are people, and they notice that.
So, what's the status of the directive at this point? Is it on hold at this point, or it's enforced till somebody says otherwise? A judge, I would take it.
Yeah, it's enforced, but it's a funny thing because the directive itself doesn't call for any kind of enforcement. Mm-hmm. It only calls for a threat to withhold funds later if it's not adhered to. Right. So there's nothing that's actually being done to enforce it. It's just that it's out there and states are being told, you know, if you don't abide by this directive, you could lose funds. But nobody's lost any funds. So there hasn't been anything you'd think of as an enforcement action.
So what's the status of the case, the lawsuit itself? Where does it stand right now?
It's filed. And
it's filed. Where was this filed at?
I don't actually – do you know, Scott?
I have the details of it, but is that the Palatine Township High School District 211? I'm not sure if that's the case or not.
Because there's a bunch of different states
yeah.
that are in it. They all filed, and then it had to get consolidated. But I should have checked into that, too. I didn't check where they consolidated it.
Yeah. But a federal court.
A federal court.
We'll hear it
yeah.
first.
Yeah.
Then if it goes on, it'll go to appeals next, and then might make it to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, in the federal court system, there's a judicial panel on multi-district litigation. So if you get the same suit filed in a bunch of different districts, they have a process for choosing where it's going to be heard, and then it will go up through a court of appeals, and then it probably will go to the Supreme Court.
Well, thank you for joining me today, Scott.
Sure.
And Ken. Scott Knox of Scott Knox Attorneys at Law and NKU Chase College of Law Professor Ken Katkin. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's show was Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer was Belinda Kai. Dave Shermer was the technical director. I'm Mark Haney.